How's everyone doing out there? All right, this is Jeff Lindahl, and this is another edition of... Hey, Jeannie.
Hey.
Another edition of Let's Grill Jeannie, and she is all set to take on all your questions because she had a long weekend. All she did was a little R&R.
Oh, yeah, so, right.
yeah. So if you want to get onto the queue really fast to ask questions, just press *0, and the operator will get you in the queue. All right, Jeannie, take it away.
Okay, so a few little things before we begin our questions. I want to welcome everyone to Let's Grill Jeannie Call. A big shout-out to the brand-new Mastery students from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I enjoyed being with you this past weekend, and we all learned a lot while we were there. Weather was perfect, and so was the company. As soon as you are able, please get in your student data form so we aren't wasting any minutes without a coach. Tammy and the crew are heading out to the multifamily training this week in Chicago. Jeff has the week off from the immersion, which is great. And we're going to start today's training with a short high five on Les Jepson. Those that are from Minneapolis met him this past weekend. He came to take me out to lunch. He was a little long drink of water there. He is on his 50th closing since 2013. He owns multiple multifamilies and a bunch of commercial properties in both Florida and Minneapolis, and he's looking for more, and he's a sponsor. So if anybody did get his card or met him, he's your key in there. He can give you the ins and outs of what goes on in the Minneapolis market. Today's topic we're going to go into, but first we're going to see if we have any questions, and then we'll do a little bit of teaching, and then we'll go back to questions. So, operator, do you have any questions in the queue?
We have no questions at the moment.
Okay. So what we're going to talk about is raising money from your investor and the types of splits that we do and what it is based on. So we'll start if a property cash flows 12% right out of the gate, which is the Holy Trinity number for those that have listened to Dave. He has the Trinity numbers at 12% cash-on-cash return, 1.6 debt coverage ratio, and a cap rate of 8 and higher. So you can pretty much figure that you could take 35% of the deal if it cash flows 12% and give the investors 65% of the deal. If a property is a little bit marginal at the beginning, but you know you can reverse that with a little lipstick, that is the carve-out I would suggest. If a property has major repositioning, you need to do, you may be taking 30% of the deal and giving the investors 70% of the deal until the property starts cash flowing better. So perhaps they start out at a cash-on-cash return of 8%, and you would get the difference of what it is currently cash flowing. But ultimately, they are going to get an 8% preferred rate of return before you take a nickel. Once it starts cash flowing, you will be playing catch-up. So you may set it up with a 90-10 split after the 8%. So they get the first 8, then you get 90%, and they get 10% until you catch up to them. So if the property comes in at 11, you will get 2.7%, and they will get 8.3%. It's pretty easy to understand, but sometimes if you write it down on a piece of paper, it becomes much clearer to you. So once you are both at 8%, then it's going to be a 50-50 split for the cash flow coming into the door. So that's on the front end. On the back end, it goes back to the original carve-outs that you had put into place. So if it was a 35-65, then you take from what you bought the property for to what you sell it for, and you minus out the broker fee as well as pay back from the loan amount, minus out whatever investment money is still left in the deal after the 5 years, and split the final figure 35-65. I can show each of you these types of numbers in a property package so it's clear to you. And if I can get a list when the call is over with, I will be doing that. So if it cash flowed 8% year one, 9% year two, 10% year three, 11% year four, and 12% year five, that's a 50% return on your money. You're going to take that return of 50% and add it to the 65 that we originally said, and that's giving you 115. You divide that by 5, and you're getting an annualized return of 23%. Now, you tell me somebody that wouldn't like an annual return of 23%, and I'll tell you, these people don't know what they're talking about. The banks are giving you, if you're lucky, 2%. The hard money lender, I mean, they're taking you to the cold. The stock market is very volatile. You're lucky to get 8 or 9% outside of your 401k. So if you can invest in real estate, which is secure, and get a return of 23% annualized, I mean, you're made of money, and it's a great investment. So think about it in this light, and it'll be so much easier to talk to your investors and let them know what's in it for them. Take yourself out of the equation. You've already got your acquisition fee. They're paying you to babysit their money. And if you can give these modest returns yearly, and then once you cash out the property, give them a great return of 23% annualized, you'll have no problems raising money. Okay, operator, do we have any questions at all?
Yes, we do. We have one question. That question comes from Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Jeannie, how are you? It's Tom from Philadelphia.
I am great, thanks.
Good.
Hey, did you ever close that property, Tom?
I did not. Upon further due diligence, there was a lot more needed in capital expenditures to get the property where it needed to be, and so the numbers just failed to work after taking that into account.
Well, at least it's a lesson learned, and you got close.
Oh, absolutely. No, it was a lesson learned, and I was happy to do it. I went myself and physically visited the property, so that was a learning experience. I toured some other properties, and it helped me further my relationship with the broker and the property manager I'm working with in my market. So it was time well spent.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So what's your question for today?
Yeah, so, of course, on to the next deal. I'm looking at a property that's 80 plus units, and it was purchased fairly recently. So I'm still trying to get the exact figure, but there's a prepayment penalty on the current loan. So I wanted to get your opinion on should I look at assuming the loan? Should I look at paying the prepayment penalty and getting my own loan? What's your experience there, and what should I be looking out for?
Well, here's the thing. You got to see how much time is left on the existing loan. If it's 2 or 3 years, that's a short amount of time. But if it's 10 years, I mean, my goodness, sure. It's probably got a really low interest rate. And make sure when you find out if it's assumable, and how many years are left, can your loan be assumed again? That is the real key, because you may be in the exact same position if you assume their loan and it's not assumable again. What's going to happen when you have a prepayment?
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it depends on the timing. I mean, if you plan on coming into, if it's got 3 years and you plan on coming into the property and, you know, running the property for the next 3 years and selling it, have a good exit plan in place, especially so your investors can know. But if you have a 10-year and you're looking to keep the property for 5 years, you got to make sure it can be assumed again.
Okay. So for argument's sake, let's say it was a 10-year loan and they acquired the property 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing there's probably, 3 or 4% prepayment penalty.
Yeah.
The prepayment penalty.
Yeah, but that's all right. I mean, if you're going to get a new loan, it's on them to pay that prepayment penalty. But I would think if you're going to get an 8-year remaining loan,
mm-hmm.
you keep it for 4 and let somebody else assume the loan for the last 4.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that assumptions can take a good deal of time.
Yeah, at least 6 months. Especially if it's with ABBA funding, because I think they take the longest.
Okay. And in the case where I assume the loan and I'm looking for additional financing, is there a mezzanine loan or some kind of lien that I can put in the middle of the first lien and the equity?
We've got an amazing lender out there that knows his way around these mezzanine financing, bridge financing, all of that. His name is Eric Stewart, and his number is 321-615-8919. It's all about him and the amazing things that he can do.
Okay. Yeah, he's a great resource. Yeah, he's
really
definitely a great
is.
Resource. And
yep.
I have a call into him. I just I just left him a message earlier, so I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it. But I figured he would be a great resource to try to help.
He's pretty amazing.
Okay, good. Well, I think that's all for today. I look forward to seeing you at UP9, if not sooner.
Hey, Tom, before you go, right?
Yes, sir.
Eric Stewart did a call last month, or maybe 2 months ago. That's up on the Mastery site on recent calls with Dave. And he covers loan assumptions and what to do. And you might want to just, if you have time, listen to that recording before you call him up. And, it might be helpful. You might pull additional information from him, too.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Okay.
The other thing too, right? When you're assuming a loan, it's going to take a while, like you indicated, but you're going to have to you're tying up your investors' money too for that length of time, and it takes a while. So you just have to realize that it's going to take a little while. And when you analyze the deal, analyze it both ways: if you're going to have to assume it, or if you can get new financing on it, especially if the terms are higher on the assumption than what you can get today. So you'll have a couple underwriting that you'll have to do on it.
Okay. That's a good tip. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Up next, we have Derek. Derek, please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Jeannie and Jeff. This is Derek calling from Austin, Texas. How are you both doing?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good. I joined the Mastery programs over a week ago, and I spent the weekend already in the immersion training with Jeff. Thanks again, Jeff. That was a great weekend spent with you.
Thanks. It was great meeting you, Derek, last weekend.
Yeah.
My crazy driver.
That was fun. Jeannie, question for you. Thank you again for briefing us on the private money raising that you just described. And let me give you a bit of background, and I'll start my question. in preparation to do my fundraising. So I went in and become a limited partner of a $220 unit in Dallas. And that gave me a good opportunity to dissect what they're offering, how the syndicator offer their business and so forth. And it was a great learning experience. Anyway, the package that I got into in partner this unit investment here, the way that structure is pretty much prefer 8% upfront, and between 8 and 18% is 70-30 split, 70% to the investor, 30% to the operator, and then after 18% is 50-50. So, Jeannie, my question to you, given the Austin market is relatively small, how should I be thinking about an offer such as that compared to the structure you just described there? How do I position myself so I could get as much as reasonable at the same time being competitive to potential investor?
Excuse me one second. I just had an almond and went down the wrong pipe. Sorry. Well, Austin is much more pricier than other markets, and it's really trimmed right down because it's so popular. Everybody's going to Austin. It's a beautiful city, but it's very expensive. Maybe go to the submarkets of Austin. Even San Antonio is getting pricey. So if you go into a submarket, you're more than likely to have better returns than you are right in a city like that.
Yes. I understand, Jeannie. I guess my question is more specifically on the offering for the investors. That is, my competitors offer 8% up, and then between 8 and 18%, they do 70-30% split. And after 18%, only after 18% is 50-50. So what would you just describe beginning of this call, Jeannie, was 8% and do a catch-up, 90-10. And then right after that, you do 50-50. So obviously, the previous parameter would be more attractive to investor than what we just described here. How would you strategize to make sure that
they're reaching it? I'm asking you if they're reaching those returns.
Yeah, I guess I would know that. The deal will be closed early June. So I don't know the answer to that one, Jeannie.
I would rather under-promise and over-deliver than to throw that out there and never reach it.
Okay. Fair enough.
Those seem very high returns to me.
Okay.
Cool. I mean, and that could be like a one-off property. I mean, are you going to be able to sustain that, you know, by buying other properties in different markets? I mean, that's really out there. I mean, we have a property, I'll just give you for instance, it's in North Carolina. And when we bought it, we were committing to the investors 12% the first year. Well, amazingly enough, we found out the management company was really filtering through a lot of money to other places, and we were able to give them 17.4% the first year. And the big thing was Dave and his partner were able to get 17.4% the first year as well. So the property cash flow 34%. Those are like once-in-a-lifetime types of properties. We're talking about an average property that's going to cash flow around 12%, 13%.
Yeah.
Their returns seem very, very over promising to me.
Okay. Thank you, Jeannie.
You're welcome.
Jeff. Have a good day.
So.
Okay. Up next, we have Jean. Jean, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie and Jeff. This is Jean from San Diego. How are you guys?
We're great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So I'm pretty new to this coaching program, and it's actually my first time to call in. And my question today is, I talked to a broker, actually someone referred that broker to me and says that broker is really good. So I talked to her on the phone and tell her my criteria and stuff, and she later on sent a bunch of listing to me from just MLS. And later on she said, okay, let me call some other brokers to get some of the off-market listing. And then I realized, okay, she is a buyer broker. So I just wondering if there's any issue to work with a buyer broker, or I should deal with the listing broker directly, because I didn't realize that first place.
Well, the only thing I would say is somehow she's got to get paid. So
yeah,
if she's got an agreement with the listing broker that they will share in the brokerage fee, then you're out of it. But if she sends you over a contract, you have to pay her for any deals that she brings you away from another broker. I mean, that could be, I mean, it's not a all out, oh, you can't do that. You can do that, and you can put it into, you know, some other closing costs on your spreadsheet to show what the numbers are going to look like, and ultimately your investors are going to pay it. It's just nice to know up front whether you're working with somebody that's, you know, getting paid by the seller or getting paid by you.
Okay. Okay, so I just need to find out. And do you know usually how much is the commissions? What's the percent that usually the buyer or seller will pay?
Well, it all depends on their individual office, but typically you got to think about a broker's going to get around, you know, 3 to 6%.
Okay.
So
you've
got to figure out whether the seller's going to pay the listing broker or the listing broker's going to share it with the selling broker.
Okay. What if I choose to not work with her and don't want to ruin the relationship? What's the polite way to tell her, like, I wanted to only deal with the listing brokers?
Well, it's kind of like a touchy subject. Maybe she is a listing broker. She just doesn't have a lot of listings in your market.
Oh, okay.
And
another way of handling it, like, let me jump in here, is has she sent you over any type of contract signed?
No.
Okay. So when you call her back, right, tell her that that you're going to be working with, like, 3 or 4 listing agents, because we're always up front when we talk to brokers, even listing agents, because they and tell them that you plan on taking down 3 or 4 properties in this market. And, like, so with this buyer's broker, she has your criteria, and just say, well, if you bring me in a good deal, you know, we're going to make that contract. So she'll send you over a buyer broker contract, and you want to make a deal specific. Otherwise, they'll come in, and you're going to have to pay her 2% for any deals that you close within a 150-mile radius of that initial property for the next 9 months, and you don't want to sign that contract. If she signs the so you want to take that and just tell her you're going to make it deal specific, because you can find some off-market deals with some buyer brokers, but usually to get that deal to go through with the listing agent, they don't want to give up any of their commission. So you have to, like Jeannie was saying, you have to underwrite it with in your closing costs other than the underwriting template, where it's part of your raise that you're going to be paying that buyer's broker fee. And it does affect your cash-on-cash return on doing it that way. But we've done a couple of deals with buyer brokers, and we just made it deal specific. I've seen students sign that agreement, and next thing you know, they can't, and they don't work with that buyer's broker anymore. They can't close any deals because they still have to pay that 2%. no matter what deal they close within that market. And that's the way the language is on those buyer broker
agreements.
So you have to be
right.
with that. And if they do sign something, just send them to the office and we'll review it and make sure you don't sign something that's not right.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Thank you. And I have another question. So,
Wait a minute. You only get two questions. You only get two questions.
No, you get as many as you want. Keep going.
Oh.
He's a tease. He's a tease.
Okay. Thank you. So, another one, because I'm still reading and educating myself on this 26 competence videos, and another call, the teach call I just learned yesterday is you're not supposed to tell the broker that you actually need to raise money when you talk to the broker. You want, because they will lose the confidence and may feel you're wasting their time. So my question is, what if you're on the contract and you can't raise the 25% down? What's going to happen after that?
Well, you have a letter of intent that you've put in, and you're allowing yourself a window that if you can't get a commitment from the bank and raise the money, you have a drop-dead date that you have to have that done before you can get your money back, and you got to make sure you're within that date.
Okay. All right. Okay, so
never use investor money for earnest money deposits or for doing your due diligence or anything like that. Don't use investor money, because if the deal doesn't come to fruition, you're going to owe it to them.
Okay, okay. And by that certain date, I still can back out, right?
Yes. You can still back out and not lose your earnest money deposits or your earnest, your CD.
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Okay. Up next, we have Karen. Karen, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Karen from Baltimore. How are you, Jeff and Jeannie?
We're good, thanks. How are you, Karen?
Good, good. I'm fairly new to the Mastery Program, and my partner and I attended the Immersion Program with Jeff this past weekend in Virginia. We haven't analyzed any deals other than in class yet, but we do have just a general question about the acquisition fee, because we've heard two different responses to it. Is that fee solely for us, or is that shared with the sponsors and the investors?
It's shared with the sponsor.
It is shared. And is that same split?
No, because sometimes you can co-sponsor a deal. So you only need, maybe you have the net worth equal to the mortgage amount, but you don't have the liquidity of mortgage payments that the bank's looking for, so you need somebody to jump in, or vice versa. But if you're solely responsible on the sponsor for both, signing on the dotted line as well as having the liquidity, then maybe you want to give a 50-50 split between you and the sponsor, so they would get half of the acquisition fee.
Okay, and if we do have the net worth for one or the other, what is the customary split?
Well, it's whatever you and the sponsor can devise. I mean, some of the sponsors want to see you be successful, and maybe they'll take 10% or 15%. It just depends on the individual sponsor.
I see. Okay. Okay, that clears that up. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I was given a couple of questions, but first I want to remind everybody that the Ultimate Partnering 9 is coming up July 28, 29, and 30 in Boston. If you have not signed up, give us a call and get registered. you won't want to miss it this year. Between Emmett Smith and Matt Romney and the 1,000 other people that are going to be there, what a time it's going to be. And don't forget about the UP9 video testimonial contest. If you've done deals, give us in details your best super creative video. The videos can be emotional, funny, or anything in between. First prize gets an entire day with Dave here in our office. If you have any questions about the contest, please call Jermaine, and he'll help in any way he can. Okay, so I have a question from Mark Nadeau, new mastery student. Jermaine, does the Lindahl Group have recommendations for a real estate attorney and SEC attorney? Trying to get the power team together. Thanks. Well, I can give you the SEC attorney. We've been recommending Kim Taylor. We have several. So let me go to my little gold book, which I keep here in the office and has a lot of good information on it. And I will give you Kim Taylor, and her company is Syndication Attorneys, and her number is 858-335-8825. We have several real estate attorneys, so it really depends on who you're looking for. So if you would call me in the office at 339-469-5111, I'll give you a couple to choose from. Any questions yet, operator?
Yes, we actually have a few. Our up next we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Hello, Jean. This is Joe from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. How are you? And Jeff?
I'm well, Joe. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I have a question. What percentage of the deals, let's say I put a deal together looking for my acquisition fee, et cetera, what percentage of the deals do not involve me putting any money into the deal or any investors, rather just relying on the investors alone to put up all the money?
Well, you should consider all of them.
Oh, okay. So most of the deals are, if not, let's say 90% or more, then the investor or the one putting the deal together is not putting any money into it himself?
No. And if
okay.
You do put money in, if you do need to put up the 1% earnest money deposit to get the property off the market and in your hands, and then maybe you'll have to pay some fees for going out and inspecting and walking the units, you know, and then doing a lease audit with your management company. Whatever monies you put up, you get back at the closing table.
Okay. So, all right, that's what I thought. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much. Have a good day.
You're welcome.
You too.
Okay, up next we have Lee. Lee, please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Jeannie. In piggybacking off of the earnest money question, the young lady also touched upon it as well. The earnest money deposit, is it a, I guess I'm looking for an average number for earnest money or a percentage?
It's 1% of the purchase price.
Okay. All right, great.
The property's $3 million, you're putting up $30,000 for earnest money.
Okay, and within that time, you do your due diligence, and either you go forward or upon the expiration of your letter of intent, you get that money back if the numbers don't work out.
Exactly.
All right, great. Thank you.
Okay, we have no further questions at the moment.
Okay, I have one from Tom Cormier. This may be kind of a simplistic question, but for a business email, does an @gmail.com address give the right impression to brokers, agents, investors, financial institutions, and network contacts? I've seen some blurbs about Gmail for business. Is that of value to learn more about, or just go with the GoDaddy type of service for an email like tom@greatinvestmentdeals.com. I have a registered LLC named Riverview Investment Group LLC. Well, Dave Lindahl uses a Gmail address. What I would do is establish a company like you've done and put your letters of intent in as tom@greatinvestmentdeals.com, whatever the company name you're going to choose. I know you were kidding with that name, but whatever the company name you were, and or assigns, and the assigns will be the LLC. That's how you want to represent yourself, but I don't see a problem with a Gmail address either. You want to answer anything, Jeff?
Do I? No.
Okay.
No, I don't see. Gmail. I like when there's pictures there on the
I
Gmail.
I do too.
Because I can really identify with people. Same thing with your business card. Like if you have a picture on it, it's like, because when you come from an event, it's usually like you can really identify with the person that you just talked to, even though you're making notes on the back of it. So you want a picture on your business card and a blank on the back so people can make notes about the conversations that they have with you, too. So.
Okay, I have another
question.
Yeah,
make sure you have 1,000 of them for the UP9.
UP9, yep.
Jeannie, why don't you go over what's involved with SpeedNet networking at the UP9?
Okay, so Dave sets it up so one row turns around and networks with the row behind it, and you move from space to space. You have about 90 seconds to give your little elevator speech, meet the person, exchange business cards, and then you go to the next person and vice versa, right straight through the whole line. And they do that multiple times throughout the weekend so that you should have no trouble. If you give a card out, you best be getting a card. If they don't have cards, they could put them on an index card and give them out. But everybody that you hand a card to, you should get something back from so that you can build a database. And those are the people you're going to reach out to when you have a property and you want to talk about it and build a team. It's the people that you met there.
Yep, basically who you are, what markets you're in, what you're looking for. Are you looking to fund a deal? Do you have a deal that you're looking for funding? Do you have money? It's basically, you just have like a whole Rolodex, and like I say, 1,000, because that's what we intend on having, about 1,000 people there. So put that order in right now. Get those business cards ready. And make sure they're not glossy either, so like the other person can write on the back.
You want to be able to write on them. So I have another question, and this is from Alethea. It's from Marilena, who is Alethea's partner. So it says, hello, Jeannie. Alethea and I are currently evaluating a property in Houston. It is centrally located within one of the Houston wards. The complex is neighboring two other medium older complexes. Across the street, a luxury apartment complex was built about a year ago. Due to the area and its location, the complex is able to increase in rents. Because of the luxury apartment, most of the units have been remodeled. The roofs have been recently updated. It does have flat roofs with AC units on top. The complex has no swimming pool. How does Dave feel about Houston? Can you give me any insight into Houston? Well, number one, if you don't live there, don't buy them, because more than likely the lender on the property is going to want someone involved on the management team to live there. Not at the complex, but live in Houston. Houston has no zoning. It is a good market if you live there. If you don't live there, I would say no. as far as it not having a swimming pool, that's a big deterrent when you can reach temperatures of 125 and higher in the middle of the summer. And having AC units on top and flat roofs, I mean, to me, the complex has some issues. And to be a sandwich amongst other complexes and having a luxury one across the street, if you're the only one that doesn't have a swimming pool, I think you're going to be in trouble as to renting these units out. That's just my personal feeling. It's nothing etched in stone that I can send you any details on, but I'd run the other way if it was me. You want to say anything, Jeff?
Yeah, with Houston, I'd stay away from the airport area. And if you're looking at Houston, I believe the path of progress is to the north east for Houston.
Okay, any other questions,
operator? Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We have Joe with another question. Joe, please go ahead.
Okay.
Hi, guys. It's Joe again from Cherry Hill. I'm going to the upcoming immersion class in June, and regarding the computer and the spreadsheets, are we using the spreadsheets on the underwriting templates or some other spreadsheets? Because I'm not really have a lot of experience with other spreadsheets other than the underwriting template, our own.
You're going to use the underwriting template.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The underwriting template. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. That's what I needed to know. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'll ask a question while the operator is busy. This one's from Jennifer Hale. It says, have you seen any changes in the way lenders are approaching investors? I personally, Jen, I know that you talk to Eric Stewart a lot. He can really give you the straight skinny on that one. Any questions, operator?
Yes, I apologize. Up next, we have Ernestine. Ernestine, please go ahead.
Hello, this is Ernestine from New Jersey, Passaic Park. I have a couple of questions. First question, I call a realtor to see a property, investment property, 49 unit. Her question was, we need to show something from our sponsors, like have an investor's backing. She said she needs to see something in writing that we will be purchasing the property. So which was a little bit, you know, it didn't sit well with me. My partner and I, we've been discussing this, and I decided to ask you guys, what's the best way to go around that?
Well, I'll give you a couple of for instances, and then I know Jeff will chime in on this one as well.
Okay.
If you produce a letter, a transactional funding letter, stating that, you know, there is money available, and when they press you for it, those besttransactionfunding.com is the website to go to, and get a proof of funds letter for, you know, maybe $5 million, just so you have the coverage there. Some brokers are pretty savvy, and they don't like that anymore, but it's it gives you an opportunity to at least get the numbers usually. And if you have a sponsor and the sponsor is willing to talk to the broker, then that will give you some leverage. But to tell the real estate agent or the broker that, oh, yeah, we'll buy the property, you know, just send me the numbers. No, we're basing our underwriting on the numbers that she's going to provide us, and we want to make sure the actuals, and we want to do our numbers. And I would just explain to her that if the deal makes sense, the money will be there. If the deal doesn't make sense, then we're going to walk away. And you need to be really firm with her and just say, if you don't want to sell the property because we're not showing you proof of finances, then I will find a better broker to work with. In my opinion, she's probably been burnt several times and doesn't want to spin her wheels thinking that you can't close. So you have to build real confidence that you're a closer. And if the deal comes down the pike, you will get the money and you will close. You have to convince her.
Okay. That's one.
To add to that, I would just go up to the Mastery website in the search bar. Just type in POF, and we had a call that will pop up, and it basically says how to handle the proof of funds questions, and the bullets on the call, the proof of funds defined, and why a real estate broker will ask it, how to prepare for it. Couple other things. I'd listen to that. You'll get brokers out there that will just ask for it right away. And in this business, you get brokers that you can work with, brokers that are just a pain. And so you'll have to screen them. If they keep asking for the POF question, then I would if you're doing it on the phone and they're asking right away after you're asking for the financials, then you might be triggering something where they don't think, like Jeannie was saying, that you're going to be able to close. So have your partner listen to what you're saying, because you might be triggering something when you're calling them up that's doing it. But I listen to that call, and just remember there are brokers out there that will just ask you right away. And you'll find brokers.
But the thing is, the thing is, my partner, we did have a meeting with her, and she couldn't even show us the property because she forgot the key. So, yes, and my partner has been doing this for over 30 years, and he said, so when I told him, he said, she forgot the key, she couldn't show us the inside of the property, and she wanted us to show her proof of funding. Is she crazy? So he said no. He said, I'm not doing that. I need to see the inside of the property first. Before I commit to anything. So
You really want to look at the financials first before you even look at a property to make sure it makes sense, because if the financials don't make sense, then we usually don't look at properties unless the financials make sense. But
like the financials, she forgot the key and she didn't have the numbers, nothing to show us. So as you talk about the finance, there's nothing there. So it's just a blind eye here,
Yeah, a lot of times too, if they're looking for who your partners are and things like that. We'll be happy to share that with the seller's attorney. Our attorney and the seller's attorney, we can exchange them. But I just don't give my investors out there to anyone. So we looked at the financials, and it's going to be between counsels on it, because, like I said, we don't like to know. We never share our investors, because who knows? They could take that investor to us.
Exactly.
But you have to be smooth, right, because you want to build a relationship. And sometimes if they ask for the proof of funds, you just start laughing, really? Are you serious? And so you just play it off like that, you're shocked that they're
Yeah. And that's what I did. I just play it off. I say, I'm going to get back to her on that, So I discussed it with my partner. And just what you said, he said he needs to see some numbers first before he don't want to share his investors with them, because he can do that. So that's that. Okay, so that's the key of that. The second question, is it advisable to put flipping houses on your business card when you order business cards? You think the word flipping is a good thing to put on the card, or is a deterrent from the seller?
Well, what are you trying to do? Are you being in single family or are you being in multifamily?
No, we're basically doing, commercial property and multifamily. Think of families, if it do come along, yes, but our main goal is commercial and multifamily.
Two two sets of business cards and keep you flipping with the single family thing.
Okay, flipping with single family. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And the second one, no, you know, leave at the word flipping. Okay, the multifamily. Okay. Okay.
What's the name of your flipping business? What's the name of your flipping business?
The flipping, well, you mean our business name, we came up with Bob Keju as an associate LLC investment, real estate investment.
Oh, you do? You have that into an LLC?
Yeah, I'm sorry, LLC, yeah. It's the Bob Keju Associates LLC Incorporated, yeah.
No, that's really good, because you can use, you could use that for both, because it sounds like it's just investments, right?
Okay.
So you could use the name on that. So you can use the same business name, and but underneath it, you want to say something about that you do either large multi families in emerging markets, something
mm-hmm.
like that. So you want to do that? Well, it's part of your 30-second pitch too.
Elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Okay, like a little elevator pitch. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I call it the 30-second commercial.
Okay.
How many times are you on an elevator doing that pitch?
I know, right?
That's the UP8, right? The UP8.
I don't know why they say elevator pitch.
So we're at the UP8, and we're all hanging around the bar drinking waters, right? And this guy went up to his room, and he came down, right? He goes, hey, I was just on the elevator, and I just raised $400,000. I'm like, no way. He goes, yeah. He goes, that elevator pitch works.
No.
He was psyched. Everyone couldn't believe it. He goes, yeah. Yeah. So it's good. It's good stuff. Hey, can you guys send over your confirmations for the New York immersion?
Okay.
I sent it out last night. It's in your
email. Yes, I saw it.
Hotel
saw
and all
that
stuff. So I want to save you a spot on the bus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in June. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, operator?
Yes, up next we have Lee. Lee, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. I just needed a little clarity. A few questions back, you touched upon the Houston market and bank financing, and someone wants either the principal to be in the area of the property or the management company. I just wanted a little clarity on that. I am in the New York City market, so I'm looking for anything outside of the New York City market to meet that Trinity number. I just want clarity.
Skip over Houston. I would skip Houston. You're too far away.
Oh, I'm not looking at Houston. You were talking about Houston, and you said something. Somebody wants you to live in the area of the property. Was that regarding the management or the bank?
No, somebody on your management side. So it could be you, your sponsor, or your partner, somebody. But that doesn't apply to all areas. It's only to those areas that have no zoning.
Got you. Okay. I got you. Zoning. Okay. So I'm in a New York City area, and off
it
the top
zoning.
Of my head. Right.
There's only three areas of the country that don't. Memphis, Tennessee, Houston, Texas, and there is pockets of Baltimore, Maryland that do not have zoning. They are just now clearing their way to get into full zoning, but Houston, Memphis, and Baltimore are the three key areas right now.
Okay, and who was making that requirement? Was it the bank providing the financing?
Providing the loan, yes.
Got you. Okay. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, up next we have Charles. Charles, please go ahead.
Hey, this is Charles here in Atlanta, Georgia. How y'all doing today?
I'm good. How are you? It was good to see you a few months back. Was it last month? It was last month.
Yeah, it was in April.
Yep.
It was a little cold up there.
Yeah, it's just under 50 today.
Okay.
The sun
okay.
is shining.
Okay. It is. It's nice here too. My question is about the rent roll. Whenever I get the T-12s, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do with them. The rent rolls is I'm looking at the thing and I'm like, okay, I know I'm supposed to get the gross scheduled rent from this thing. I got that. And I know you're supposed to calculate the lease exposure from it. But other than those two things, what else do I, when you look at a rent roll, when you first analyze a property, what else do you need it for?
Well, you're looking to see if they're behind in any payments, when they first came into the property and how much they put down as a security deposit. And then you're looking to see if they've renewed. You want to make sure that everybody's on time with their payments. And there's some things that you can institute when you take over to make sure they're on time. But this is, when we look at a rent roll, we want to see where they're exposed. If the end date, say it's a 20-unit building and 16 of them are due to expire in the month of July, that's a big no-no. So they should be staggering the rent so that you're not exposed, because if you lose all these people, who's going to be making the mortgage payment?
Right, okay. Okay. So the biggest part is the exposure. That's what you're really looking at the rent rolls for.
Yes. Yeah, you want to see the exposure, and you want to see if people are on month to month. You want to make sure that they're on leases. Because you could have, they could decide they're going to sell the property. They got a 20-unit building. They've got, you know, 10 people on leases, and they got 10 people that they just threw in there on a month-to-month basis until they sell the property, then these people are exiting. And you've got a 50% vacant building.
So that wouldn't be a good deal. Okay, I see what you're saying.
No.
That wouldn't be something
you're
interested
in. So you really want to check the leases, you know, to make sure when they came in. And a lot of times brokers give you a rent roll, but all they're giving you is the apartment number and when they came in and, you know, if they're paying their rent on time, what the current rent is. But if you get a computerized generated rent roll from the management software, there is no altering or playing around with those. You can see everything.
Okay. Okay. All right. That's all I had. Thank you.
Mhm. Did you want to add anything, Jeff?
You covered it pretty good. Like, what you want to do is look, if you have long-term tenants, like Jeannie was saying, you want to look at the move-in date. So you want to see the average stay is about 20 months, so about 2 years for the average tenant to stay. So if you look, if you see anyone that's there 3 to 5, and you see a lot of people there 3 to 5, you want to look at that. But then you also want to look to see what they're paying for rent. You want to compare it. Most rent rolls will have what the market rent is and what they're paying for the rent. So you want to compare it to see if you have long-term tenants in there that are paying close to market rent. And then the other thing you want to look at is the balance area. You want to see what they owe. If they owe more than like 3 months, it's like they're not going to be paying rent. You know, it's pretty much a vacant unit, because people that owe more than like 2 or 3 months, they never pay. So those are like a couple of other things to add to that.
And another thing, just to throw it in there, if you are giving away an apartment to a property manager and maybe somebody that works for your maintenance crew, that's money that you're losing. You should not have a property manager living on the premises if you can help it, unless it's part of her employment status, because she's getting chummy with the residents and now she's sitting by the pool on her time off talking with them and making allowance for her friends to pay a day late, 2 days late, and
right.
It's just not a good thing.
Right, yeah. Okay, so let's say the exposure is fine. That's fine, but you have people who aren't paying. Let's say, because it's just 1 month, but you see somebody who's behind in 3 months. Okay, so let's say out of, I don't know, 20 units, and you have three people who are behind 3 months. Is that a really, well, I guess in a 20 unit, that would be a big deal. Yeah, that would be a
well,
big deal.
Well, that's a sign to me that the property management company is not doing their job.
So that's fixable, right?
They get paid
so,
on collected rents.
Right, okay. So that's a value add, right?
It is.
Right, okay. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, but you don't want people that are taking allowances already before you even took the property over. Maybe they heard that the property's being sold and they decided to withhold their rent because maybe they think they're going to get a rental increase and they're going to leave anyways. So they're just not paying.
Wow, I didn't think about that. Okay.
And if it's in a not landlord-friendly, you know, state, I mean, they could squat on your property for a year and not pay you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay, Charles.
Y'all take care.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Up next we have Rhea. Rhea, please go ahead.
Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Jeff. It's Rhea in San Diego. How are you guys today?
Good, thanks.
Good, good.
That's good. Jeannie, I'm following up on the questions. I sent you the email last week, and then I just got quite a few properties to analyze and didn't get a follow-back up with you on that. So one of the properties I was looking at is on leased land, and the current lease goes out to 2151. Is that something that you guys
gotcha.
Would recommend looking at or avoiding at all costs?
Jeez. So the leases stay the same till 2151?
No, the land is leased, so it's not owned land. The apartment itself is owned, but it's on leased land from the city or the state.
Well, I mean, 2151, we all could be dead by then.
I mean, you're only going to hold
the property 3 to 5 years, right?
Well, and that's why I wasn't sure whether it was something to worry about or not, because it is so
far. I don't know, Jeff, what do you think?
I think it's going to affect your, since you're raising the question about it too, right, your exit strategy, and I would have to find out about the financing on that too, with other lenders. Like, it's almost like having mineral rights underneath the land, but you're still buying, owning the land, so that's like...
Yeah,
I would definitely see what the impact on the lending is. I think I know the property you're talking about too. I went by that property. Is that property like set behind a strip mall? Like
Well, this particular one is actually in one of my markets in Nashville. So I haven't seen it outside of on Google Maps.
I saw. I would usually with that. Who's a? What I would do is go onto that broker's website and get the information about that lease because they'll have that. They'll have the information. They'll spell out like the terms, what goes on with the lease, what goes on afterwards. But and then if it's a big brokerage company that has a listing, usually they have in-house lenders. So just ask the broker, like, what are the implications about this lease on the terms for writing the terms? If they say, hey, we finance these all day long in this market, then it's something that's market specific where they're controlling the land, because I saw a property package, but I didn't get into the lease part of it because it was just after I went through the financials, I wasn't concerned about the lease. You know, it didn't make sense, so I didn't look more into it. But see if they can send you over the lease information on it.
Okay. If I remember correctly, I think this one's CBRE, which they're huge. So,
yeah.
But I have to double check
yeah.
that. So. Okay. I think that's it.
All right.
Okay. Have a great day.
Okay, and that's going to do it for Let's Grill Jeannie. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have a Let's Grill Jermaine, you know. So I know he's all psyched about that. But no, next is there a – what's next week? Next week's a Let's Grill Dave, right, a Tuesday with Dave call? So, yeah.
Yep.
So we're in the third week. So, yep. So we'll have be having – so stop – create your list of questions, right? Because part of being in the mastery program is being able to just call up Dave and ask him questions. So there you go. And Dave is just like Jeannie, really easy to talk to, full of information, and like they're basically trying to make you guys, everyone successful in this. So that's what we do. We want to get you on the Wall of Fame. So if you come to, if you're in Rockland, swing by. Come on in. If you're there on, if you come by on a Friday, it's always someone's turn to make desserts, and we make them in the oven at the office, so that nice smell. Jeannie, what are you making Friday?
I already made them. You weren't here. I made two sheet chocolate cakes.
Oh, man.
One was white frosting, and one was
yeah.
white frosting, and then Oreo cookie crumble on top. You missed it.
Did you save me any?
I wasn't here. I was in Minneapolis. I came in Thursday night with my cakes.
You did? You're awesome. All right. So
yes,
that's going to
do
it for today's call. If you have any if there was something that we discussed on the call, if you have any questions or you need further insight, just give us a call here. Okay? So thank you, Jeannie. Thanks
Bye, everybody. Thank you. Yep. Take care.
Bye.